If you're enjoying this podcast, please consider leaving a rating or review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. It really helps me out a lot. Cheers.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promoting for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Let's say you want to write a big story, a big epic sci-fi space opera. And you're wondering, how can I make sure readers don't get lost in this? How can I ground this massive fantastical world in a scale that allows readers to understand it and, more importantly, enjoy it? That's what we're going to be talking about in today's episode of the Novel Analyst Podcast. Hello and welcome to the Novel Analyst Podcast. I'm Jed Hearn, author of Fires of the Dead, and every episode it is my job to analyze a story that I loved to help you become a better writer. Today's episode is titled Leviathan Wakes by James S.A. Corey. Grounding stories with characters. So we'll get into our analysis of Leviathan Wakes, the sci-fi space opera, in a second. But before that, just a quick personal update. I recently gave away a signed paperback copy of my debut fantasy novella, Fires of the Dead, which is this fast-paced fantasy read about magicians who can draw energy from fires to make their own flames. Over 130 people entered this giveaway, so it was really cool to get that reception. Makes me feel very lucky to know how many of you are interested in my book. This is my very first fantasy novella, so super exciting. And you can stick around to the end of this episode for me to let you know how you can join my email newsletter so that you can be kept up to date if I do any future book giveaways. I did one for some Joe Abercrombie fantasy novels a while back, and that had a really great reception too. So stick around to the end and I'll let you know how you can join my email newsletter to be notified next time I do a book giveaway. So, Leviathan Wakes by James S.A. Corey is a sci-fi space opera about this interplanetary war between the kind of inner planets of Earth and Mars and the outer planets in the solar system and the asteroids and the miners who work on there. And it is a big, epic story. It's just the first book in a series that hasn't even finished yet. And the book is, you know, a massive thing. And the scale of the story, the scale of the universe that is explored in it is massive. But it doesn't feel overwhelming. It feels like it's grounded in these characters. So in this episode, I want to analyze how James S.A. Corey did this. And there are some mild spoilers ahead. So if you haven't read Leviathan Wakes, read it first, come back to this. So, like I mentioned before, the true success of this epic sci-fi space opera, and this is a theme that you'll see running through pretty much every review for the book, is that it has this ability to ground this epic story of planetary war in the small scale of individual human struggle. So I'm going to give you an example of why this is an effective technique and why you might want to consider doing it in your stories. So I want you to consider a scene from a film, just picture an imaginary film that we're creating here. And in this scene, the camera is just in a boardroom. It's just fixed in a boardroom. It's totally a stationary camera. So characters walk into the boardroom and they all sit down. Now, there's not really any chance for you to identify with any of these characters, especially if this is just, you know, the first scene in the movie. You don't know who any of these people are. They're sort of all equal in the eyes of the camera. And this lack of identification makes you a passive audience. Makes you a passive audience because you don't know, which one am I supposed to care about? Like, which one is the main one here? Maybe you get some clues from how they're sitting around the table, but it's probably not substantial. However, let's rewrite that scene. Let's imagine that instead the camera is sort of on the shoulder of one main character as she walks into the room. And the camera follows her and sort of just goes behind her as she sits down. So now we are an active audience because we're attached to this character. The camera is prioritizing this character over the others. So we're kind of subconsciously made aware that, hey, this is probably an important person. I'm going to assume this is the main character. That is what Leviathan Wakes does. It attaches us to two characters particularly. One of them is Jim Holden, who is this Earther space captain, and the other is Joe Miller, who is a Belter detective. Now, because the story attaches us to these two characters, and these are the two characters from who are providing the point of views for the different chapters in the book, we enter into this story with bias. Now, bias is sort of a word that has negative connotations, right? But when it comes to stories and perspective, it can actually kind of be an interesting and effective technique. Because when we enter into a story like this with bias, it makes it more engaging because now we're an active audience and we're rooting for a specific character. You know, it doesn't matter. This is the thing about bias and character, right? Like, if there was a story with no bias, it would probably be pretty boring for us as a reader because we wouldn't be, you know, forced to identify or, you know, encouraged to want a particular character to succeed with their thing, right? It comes back to that whole everybody is the hero of their story sort of thing. So obviously if we are attached and following one character around, our bias is going to mean that we're going to probably view them as the quote unquote hero, regardless of, you know, their morality. But what is it that makes these characters effective? How are they used to ground readers in this extraordinary sci-fi world of epic planetary proportions? Well, I think it comes down to three main techniques for me. So the first one of these is that Holden and Miller are archetypes. So an archetype is just kind of a general sort of character personality, like the, you know, the wise mentor, the evil shadowy opponent. These are archetypes, right? You can definitely see these in pretty much every story that you encounter to varying or lesser degrees. So Holden is an archetypal idealistic space captain. He, you know, thinks that people are inherently good and he does a whole bunch of idealistic hero things. Miller, on the other hand, is a very jaded and cynical detective. Now, this archetypal construction is very useful because the world is so different from what we are used to living on Earth and not having the ability to, you know, fly to Mars, which would be awesome. Having these archetypes and these sort of semi-familiar characters provides us with this really useful starting point to ease us into the world. You know, if the world was different, if the plot was different, if the characters were different, if the dialogue and the language that the story was written in was really different, we would probably struggle to find a way to slot ourselves and enter into that world. But because we have these kind of touch points of familiarity, we have a relatively smooth transition into the world. And then, of course, the arcs of both Holden and Miller lead them into these really interesting directions and develop them beyond their archetype, which I think is the correct way to do this. So Holden gradually becomes more aware of the world and, you know, possibly more cynical or more realistic. Take your pick, whether you're glass half full, glass half empty there. Miller, on the other hand, is going through this kind of investigation where he's trying to find this girl and she is presumed missing. And while he doesn't really have any physical interactions with her, he just becomes more and more familiar with her and gradually becomes more and more obsessed with her, until he grows to kind of love the idea of her. And this provides him with a semblance of hope and feeling. So we almost see the characters become more like each other and then continue to almost invert from their original starting positions in many ways, while still retaining their, you know, unique personality. So that was the first key technique that I really identified in Leviathan Wakes, is this archetypal construction of Holden and Miller. The second part of this archetypal construction, and this is kind of the second technique here, is that the characters act as foils for each other. So a foil is a character who just, you know, contrasts with another character. Whether that's as simple and cliched as, like, you have two characters and one is really tall and one is really short, or if it's, you know, one character who's really talkative and noisy and another character who's, like, really quiet and somber, that's a foil. And Holden and Miller, as I've described before, are very much foils for each other. And this contrast gives the author this really excellent license to have these two characters argue about the nature of the world. And arguing about the nature of the world is really helpful because it helps develop the tone and the setting and the world building of the story. Because Holden is very much an idealist who thinks people will make good choices as long as they are told the truth and as long as they have full information to act on. Miller, on the other hand, being the detective here, is really cynical, and he has this outlook that people are stupid and selfish, and it doesn't matter how much information you give them, they're always going to make bad decisions. So you kind of need to control them. So this contrast is a really useful technique to note, because when you have these two extremely different point of view characters, it allows readers to explore vastly different sides of the world. And this makes it feel way richer than if you just explored one side of the coin. So if the story was just Holden's idealistic side, his idealistic point of view the whole way through, and you had his arc where he becomes gradually less idealistic, probably still would have been a great story, but it wouldn't have felt as rich and as full and as developed as when you have the idealistic space captain going up against the cynical, jaded detective. The third really interesting way that Holden and Miller are used in Leviathan Wakes is that they have really strong goals that drive the plot. So you've probably come across what I'm about to mention now, where in sci-fi and fantasy, it's, you know, sometimes a cliched trope to have a world-building travelogue. So this is where your story is, you know, all about traveling from one cool setting to the other. So it's like, oh, let's go from the cool jungle world here to the desert world. Now let's go to the ice world. Oh, now let's go to the space station. And, you know, you kind of just get this sense of like, well, this is, you know, really fun exploring all these different settings, but I didn't really come here for like a travel show. I came here for a story. And I should mention that, you know, in some stories, that's totally fine. And I have watched sci-fi movies that have only the thinnest veneer of a plot, but because they have really interesting settings, I don't really mind that they're just moving me around from, you know, cool setting to cool setting. That's fine. But what is really great about Leviathan Wakes is that it knows what it is, and it is far more interested in having character goals that move the plot. Character goals that move the plot, rather than the plot moving the characters. And I think that's so critical, having character goals that move the plot, rather than the plot moving the characters. Because when the plot is the thing that feels like it's moving everything around in the story, it can feel like the author's hand is just reaching into the book and pushing characters where the author wants them to go. That doesn't happen in Leviathan Wakes. Holden's goal is to avenge the crew of his former spaceship after it is destroyed in the opening chapters by a supposedly Martian warship. And when he accuses Mars of the attack, this sparks an interplanetary war. And this war forms the backbone of the plot. Likewise, Miller's goal, remember he's a detective in this story, is to find Julie Mayo, who's this daughter of a wealthy magnate. And she has been missing. So, you know, it's like a missing person case, but it eventually develops into something much more. So his quest to find her becomes just more and more obsessive, and he gradually develops a strange kind of relationship with this idea of her, where she becomes essentially like an imaginary friend to him because he, you know, is going through all her stuff and he like feels that he really knows her well. So having Miller as a detective here is a really fantastic move, because the nature of a detective is someone whose job is to investigate the world. So you can't really get a job more perfectly suited to the fantasy or sci-fi genre. And this is a technique I've seen in a lot of fantasy books as well, where you have a character who's just very interested in surveying the world, whether it's, you know, a character who is like an artist, so they draw things in the world and then maybe you actually get pictures of the things in the world, or if they are, you know, a historian, so they can talk you through the way that a society has evolved in the world, or, you know, they're into architecture, so they can tell you about how, like, oh, this type of building reflects this era 200 years ago and how people behaved back then. Having these kind of investigatory, exploratory characters as an archetype can be really handy when it comes to world building in sci-fi and fantasy books. So the interlinking of these two character goals, Holden's goal being to avenge his crew, Miller's goal being to find Julie, generates the story's plot and conflict, and they kind of, you know, cross over at points and culminate in the climax. So yes, we are getting cool settings in this story. This is a sci-fi space opera after all. But these cool settings and, you know, moving from one cool setting to another, it feels like a natural result of the character's goals. And you can totally take your pick with this, and this is probably what you're thinking right now. You know, you're probably asking, Jed, was it plot first or character first? I don't know. I'd have to ask the author. And I think it's ultimately a chicken and the egg thing, because, you know, us readers are probably not going to find the answer to this. But as the author, This is the kind of experience that you want readers to have. You want readers to not know which came first. You don't want readers to know if plot came first or if character came first. Because, and here's the kicker, in a well-developed story, plot and character will both work perfectly together, like this kind of interlocked, well-tuned engine. So, when it comes to writing your stories, consider how you can develop a plot that is suitable for your characters, in the sense of like the plot is a natural outgrowth of their personalities and their goals and their ambitions. And at the same time, as you are developing a plot that is suitable for your characters, ask how you can develop characters that are suitable for your plot. So if you want to tell a story that has lots of, you know, exploration of a world, maybe it's a good idea to have some characters who like to explore things, like detectives. So to summarize Leviathan Wake's effective use of character to really ground us in this extraordinarily large-scaled sci-fi epic, the first technique that I mentioned was this idea of using archetypes to ease us into an unfamiliar world. So just having this touch point of familiar characters to help us enter a story. The second technique was using foils to generate a complex, multi-sided view of the world. So this doesn't necessarily mean that you have to have two point-of-view characters in your story, but it does mean that it is useful to have characters with vastly different interpretations of the same thing. One of the things that, you know, I really want to do in a future story, after seeing this advice crop up in various writing advice places, is having a character, you know, describe, let's say, a natural setting, you know, a particular rock arch, let's say, and having one character talk about the mythos of that and how it was formed. And then I would really love for a second character to come along and just say, no, you're wrong. Like, this is what I was taught, and, you know, that doesn't reconcile with what you said. And bam, instantly you've got two characters talking about the exact same thing in the world with different stories about it, because that's exactly how we talk about our world. And it makes for way more realistic, multi-sided views of the world. And then lastly, the third technique was having strong character goals to justify our exploration of the world. What elevates Leviathan Wakes above just a, you know, standard sci-fi action space opera epic to me is the characters. And I think a kind of really useful quote that I just considered then for how you can use this approach in your stories is to think about, you know, what the first human said when they walked on the moon. You know, the famous quote about one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind. And that's really a great way to think about sci-fi. You might be having stories that are involving these giant leaps, these huge sweeping explorations and epics of humanity, but ultimately all of those giant leaps are going to be grounded in small steps by people. So bear that in mind as you write your next sci-fi or fantasy epic, and I'm sure you'll generate a story that not only has a really interesting world, but also really compelling characters. And now it is our questions segment. So if you would like to submit a question about this episode or any previous episodes, any aspect of the writing process or my own books, or you just want to comment on anything I've mentioned, you can go to jedhearn.com/question and use the appropriate links there. You can either submit a question in text form or you can submit it in audio form, and then I will play the audio on the podcast, which, you know, will sound a lot cooler than me just reading out an email you send me. So once again, go to jedhearn.com/question to submit your questions, your queries, your comments to me, and they might appear in the show. That link is also in the show notes.
I am thinking about starting a podcast and I'm wondering if you have any advice, any tips, just anything I should know beforehand, and also any ideas for said podcast. So, yeah, thank you again for responding. And yeah, have a great day. Bye.
Thanks for your question, Audrey. I think that starting a podcast is just fantastic and that you should do it. Obviously, I'm biased. I've been doing the Novel Analyst podcast for over a year. And a couple of quick caveats with my position on why podcasts are great. So I don't think they're great if you want to become famous or if you want to make a lot of money, because this podcast has not done either of those things for me. But I think they're great if you want to clarify your thinking, if you want to become a better storyteller, if you want to understand some aspect of life in greater detail. I can definitely say that having done the Novel Analyst podcast for over a year, while there have been, you know, times that I've wanted to give up, I've continued to persevere with it, and it's been worth it because it's made me a better storyteller. Not just in the sense of dissecting and analyzing stories that I really like and taking out techniques from them to use in my own stories, although that is certainly one aspect of the podcast and the main reason why it has been beneficial to me. But it has also been beneficial in the fact that it has forced me to be better at communicating my ideas to other people, because that is ultimately the proof that you understand those ideas. It's no good just saying that, oh yeah, you know, I totally understand how Leviathan Wakes makes a great story, if you can't explain it clearly to other people. The other great part of a podcast as well is in your ability to connect with people who are significantly above your pay grade. So it's thanks to this podcast that I have had, you know, a tiny bit of a platform to connect with some of my favorite authors. Gabriel Berg-Moser, I've interviewed him twice. I don't think that would have happened unless I had this podcast up. And also Gareth Hanrahan, whose amazing book, The God of Prayer, is, you know, probably the best fantasy world building that I've read this year. Having the podcast, you know, gave me something to give back to these people in exchange for them generously donating their time to be interviewed by me. So that way it's, you know, it's a win-win thing. So I would totally recommend starting a podcast, and even if it's a total failure, you know, even if no one listens to it, it's still going to be useful because it will force you to be a better public speaker, it will force you to be a better communicator, and hopefully it will just make you more passionate about whatever you're talking about. So to all of you out there who are thinking about starting a podcast, I would totally recommend it. And if you are like scared about the how do I get it uploaded or the money side of it, you can use what I use, which is called anchor.fm, which lets you post your podcast for free. You know, you can just record on your phone, so you don't even need a microphone if you're worried about that. This isn't a sponsored plug for them or anything. This is just, you know, a service that I've used for a while and I found it really useful. And it's free as well, unlike the previous podcast platform I was using, which was costing me money per month, and I feel like a chump for not knowing about Anchor earlier. So thanks, Audrey, again for your question. And again, if you would like to submit a question to this show along similar lines or about previous episodes or about anything related to writing, really, you can go to jedhearn.com/question, use the links there. The link to that as well is in the show notes. And like I promised at the start, if you want to sign up to my email list and be notified when I do new book giveaways or get, you know, sneak previews into my upcoming novels and other cool behind the scenes stuff, you can go to jedhearn.com/fires. That's jedhearn.com/fires. And the link to that is also in the show notes. And that will let you get a free fantasy short story that I wrote called Ascendant Flames, which is a prequel to Fires of the Dead, my first fantasy novel. And at the same time, that will also let you join my email newsletter so that you will be notified when I give away, you know, free books, cool fantasy stuff in the future, and all that other writing-related goodness that I mentioned before. So with that, that wraps up another episode of the Novel Analyst Podcast. Thank you so much for listening, and now go and write extraordinary stories. I'll see you next time.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.